Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this first podcast for the Spectator's Economic Innovator of the Year Awards 2020, sponsored by Julius Baer. Today we have been talking to the regional finalists for the Midlands and the North East. That's a rather curious piece of the map. It's a sort of diagonal stripe of the map, but it takes in everything from the Midlands through the whole Yorkshire and Humberside region right up to Newcastle and Northumberland up there. And we have judges representing all parts of the area. So we have with us today four judges. We have Caroline Theobald from Newcastle, Gordon Black representing Yorkshire, Clive Borden from the Midlands, Martin Cuthbert of Julius Baer, who's the regional director across this whole region, and myself, Martin van der Weer. I'm business editor of The Spectator. Before we talk about the finalists, we've got four to talk about. I'm going to ask each of the judges to introduce themselves very briefly and to say a word about how they see business life in their particular part of the region at the moment. So let's start with you, Caroline.
Thank you. And it's lovely again to be part of this competition, Martin. Thank you. And thank you, Julius Baer, too, for making it happen. I am a co-founder of a company called First Face to Face. I'm also have a passionate interest in business ethics and set up an initiative on business ethics in the Northeast. And I'm the chair of Newcastle Business School at Northumbria University, amongst other things. But I think that's enough. Business up here is very tough. I mean, we always go into recession first. We always come out of it last. My business actually sort of focuses on young people. And I'm just terribly worried about the tsunami of unemployment there's going to be as a result of COVID, despite what the government has done, which is substantial, obviously, you know, how they can continue to support businesses. As ever, during a pandemic, there's examples of very good and very bad behaviour. Late payment is still a very big issue, but I'm sure that's reflected throughout all of the regions, particularly big business not paying small businesses on time, gumming up the economy as a result. But one example which I'm delighted to be involved with up in the Northeast is something called the Open North Foundation, where a group of business leaders have come together to help other businesses through the pandemic. You know, it's a tale of two cities, or rather a tale of two countries. It, you know, it's a wonderful story for our time that businesses is actually getting onto the front foot and trying to do something positive for their peers.
Yes, I must say I myself started off early in the lockdown thinking that this was a cataclysm for business and that it needed big government and very assertive government to get us through it. I pretty rapidly changed my view to thinking businesses will get us through this crisis and government is largely incompetent, but that's a whole other debate. Let me bring in Gordon Black, speaking from West Yorkshire. Gordon, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you see things in your area.
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation to participate again. I was chairman of Peter Black Holdings, which was a public company for 25 years, supplying the major retailers in the UK with a wide range of products. We went private in the year 2000, and I now run a family office where we have a range of investments and interests. One of my main missions is, and I speak quite widely, is to spread the word that good behaviour is good business. And I am constantly upset by the decline in standards, and Caroline touched on it. We have a retail portfolio, and we've made concessions to several well-known names at this time due to the decline in business, but their failure to respond promptly and to engage with us, again, is, I think, not good behaviour and is against their own interests in the long term. As regards what's happening in Yorkshire, well, I would say that Yorkshiremen are probably the most resilient people in the country, my biased opinion. But there is a lot of worry about the future and a lot of uncertainty. And I think the biggest worry is what happens when furlough ends. It's frightening to think that there's 7 million people furloughed and what percentage of those will lose their job when it ends. So I would say it's a very worrying time across the board.
Yeah, thank you very much, Gordon. Well, I think we all of our judges today, I think we all share an interest in ethical business, and that's an interesting filter to apply to the ones we've met today and we're going to talk about. Let me go to the Midlands, Warwickshire, I think. Is that where you are, Clive? Clive Borden, who's Chief Operating Officer of Warwick Music, which is one of our past winners, a great maker of plastic trombones, a wonderful product that's played by millions of kids around the world. Clive, tell us a bit more about yourself and what's going on around you.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you to yourself and also to Julius Baer for the invitation again. Once again, the finalists are going to be very, very difficult to pick between. So my roles at the moment, I do a mixture of things. Fractional COO at Warwick Music, as you described. We've been fascinatingly, you know, innovative business trading around the world. We've been hit by a triple whammy. You know, we sell to schools. That's hard when schools are shut. We develop and sell mechanisms that are projectile in the sense of trombones and trumpets emit air, particularly when breathed through. And therefore, at the moment, they are very, very difficult instruments to sell. And we have a particular focus over the last year or two on the US. And that's no political insights here, but you know, it's a challenging market selling into the US right now. So we're in a interesting but difficult place. We're just hunkering down and waiting for things to change. Outside of that, I formed my own startup. I'm working on a business called Board Secure, which is around increasing diversity and skills, particularly on startup and scale-up boards. I'm frustrated when people talk about investability, how little people know about governance and basics. And you know, most of the boards I've sat on and most of the early startups I've worked with, you know, most founders don't know what they don't know about simple things. And I'm frustrated that that is the case. I think it can be changed through some simple platforms that I've developed. And that's starting, you know, it's an interesting time to be starting a business right now. I'm seeing some good early traction with that. And then I do a mixture of voluntary roles, where ranging from skateboarding, where I'm helping set up a new national governing body. And affected by COVID, we were meant to be an Olympic sport a month ago, hopefully winning medals. We had potentially Britain's youngest ever medalist. Sadly, that's all gone for a year, but hopefully we'll be an interesting time next year. And I'm also a trustee of the Birmingham Museums and Art Trust, which is a very, very challenging institution right now. So my major fear, the Midlands, very vibrant economy, very young economy, demographically we're the youngest part of the UK right now. And therefore there's optimism in me. Flip side is there are some difficult times ahead for some of that generation, no doubt. I'm surrounded by people who work in the large car factories of this part of the world, particularly I'm in Jaguar Land Rover country, for example, right here. That's a very, you know, there are a lot of cars parked on driveways right now, and I'm worried about, you know, the local economy in that regard. And I work a lot in Birmingham. Birmingham professional services, strong community. That's, I'm told by all who've been to Birmingham, central Birmingham recently, a very, very empty city right now in the heartland. So there's worry ahead. Flip side is, you know, like you, Martin, I believe in business taking us forward.
You seem to have a pretty good elected mayor, Andy Street, in the West Midlands. Is that making any difference? Does that kind of regional government and more power, you know, devolution of power, is that helping?
So he's visible, and one of the biggest issues Birmingham's had over, particularly in competing with other regional, both cities in the UK, I'm thinking of Manchester, Greater Manchester. Birmingham has been less visible over the last 20 years than it should have been. And when I talk about Birmingham, I mean Greater Birmingham, you know, the whole West Midlands economy. So what Andy's doing is A, being visible, he's driving his own agenda, and he's making a case to government, there's no doubt about that. And he's visible to both business and the local community. But I think it's a long-term play, and therefore I'm less focused on the individuals. I'm more interested in what he's doing, and he's certainly getting out and about. And I, you know, thank God in that regard. So, yeah, an interesting time.
Finally, Martin Cuthbert, who is head of the region for the Northeast for Julius Baer, and I think largely based in Leeds, is that right?
Mm, that's correct. And you've been to our office on a few occasions. Julius Baer is originally a family business, and I think some of the ethos that Gordon touched on resonates very much to the central theme about what we are as a business. I echo all the comments by the other panel members about concerns, particularly as furlough unwinds. What I would say slightly differently is, and I, again, Martin, your point about business will take us out of this. We work very closely with entrepreneurs via the corporate finance market. And it was interesting to watch the corporate finance market pivot when the deal flow basically stopped to support business. and talk to them about how to manage their way through this whole piece. And that's a really interesting synergy. And the feedback that we're starting to get from that marketplace, from the corporate finance market, is that they believe that there will be businesses that are in growth mode, that will look for funding, will go to market, etc. So although there may be that sort of slight turbo lag as those deals have slowed down, I think we will start to see that platform moving forward. And Caroline's point up in the northeast, some of the feedback from particularly up in the northeast around Newcastle, Teesside, has been very positive around that front. So not belittling any of the points made around furloughs, so these are very major issues, but I do think there are some really strong themes out there. And coming back to your point, Martin, business will take us out of this.
Good. Well, thank you very much for those introductions. I think that takes us on nicely onto our four finalists for this, or this extended region, as I've described it. The four that we're talking about today are all in very, very different businesses. The first was called Ethos Regeneration, and it makes a unique biomaterial for dental implants, which transforms the whole science of dental implants. And Dr. Paul Harrison, who talked to us, said one or two remarkable things. One is that this material, although it's synthetic, it changes into human bone within a quite rapid period of time. And that a comment frequently heard from his customers is, it makes me look like a good surgeon, which means it really must be a remarkable product. It's clearly an ethical business. It's got ethos, its name is meant to refer to being an ethical business. It clearly has global growth prospects if it can break into all the markets it wants to break into. I'm going to go to Caroline for a brief comment on that one first. Caroline.
Yeah, I love this. I think they've been really clever in terms of their use of social media, looking at that mentor network that they've got, looking at the Facebook, which isn't actually, corporately, they don't have a sort of view on that. So they let the practitioners speak for themselves. And when I looked at their CSR, I thought, oh, we're going to have yet another sort of sticking plaster here. Absolutely not. They've looked at their three core areas in terms of animal, environment and people, and they're actually putting things back. As a relatively small company already, there is an absolute virtuous circle here. The one reservation I had was this thing about clinical conservatism, you know, and actually whether they can reach the scale that early indications look as though they're going to get. But, you know, they've got an awful lot in place. And it was just lovely listening to Paul talk about his business. I mean, it was just, he really brought it alive. So there's my two Pennyworth, Martin.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move on to the second of our four. The second one was GCSE Pod, which provides online learning aids through handheld devices for GCSE students. It's clearly a business that's bang on the news agenda right now. And we heard from Anthony Coxon, one of its founders, how business has clearly boomed during the school closure period. Clive Borden, you're connected to the world of selling into schools. What was your reaction on this one?
So I thought Anthony was great. Business, great. Anybody selling and selling positively to schools has my admiration based on past lives. And I have a teenage daughter, so there's a lot of what they're trying to do and what they're about that I completely get right now. I guess questions, if I'm being glass half empty mode, would be around the ability to scale from here, given they've already got a reasonable amount of penetration in the UK market, and where do they go? When asking my teenage daughter where she went for her GCSE work a year or so back, YouTube was the natural place she went to, therefore free-to-air content, who owns it, etc., came to mind. And I guess the other sort of glass half empty thing was then about uniqueness and what is it. Actually, I think one of the other judges raised on the call around the impact and whether it had actually been assessed as to whether it was better or, you know, the quality of the information. I'm not prejudging. I'm sure it's brilliantly written and brilliantly crafted. And like I said, to have convinced that many teachers to have bought and adopted, fantastic. But look, there's a lot to like about the business at a particularly interesting time. I'm sure the last few months have been particularly good for the business. And I wish them well for going forward, you know, doing a very valuable thing right now.
He told us they have 85% client retention from the schools that are their customers. That's quite something, isn't it? Martin Cuthbert, you're a parent of school-age kids too, I believe. What was your response to this one?
Well, slightly older than that, just having finished her degree, but it was still very timely as a, you know, as a parent to consider the net results of this. I thought it was great. It's very much of its time. I think, as Clive says, anybody who can sell anything into schools and get a successful retention rate is doing remarkably well. I think one of the things that struck me was they talked about other markets, and it would be the depth of knowledge base that you would have for the States or Europe, etc., to have that growth. That would be a question mark for me. I presume the tech would plug into that, but you know, how do you access all of that and collate all that information and all those different examination systems and boards? So that would be the question mark around that more broadly for me. But as I say, of its time, I think the social media side of accessing information is something that perhaps all of us on this podcast don't quite understand fully how the younger generation do access this. The way they get their news and all sorts of things is completely different to what we think is the norm.
Martin is differently to me, that's all I'd say.
Yes,
absolutely. My only known right now. But. Yeah.
Gordon, did you have any observation on this one?
This was founded in 2006, therefore it's not really new. And it's a single product, and I can't see it being as mainstream as some of the other entries. It's not without its challenges, I would say.
Thank you very, very much. We'll move on to the next one. The third person we heard from was Ian Humes, the chief executive of the Alternative Pallet Company, which has as a trade name Palite. And this one was a business making alternative pallets, that is to say pallets that are not plastic or wood but made of a honeycomb paper product, which Ian explained to us is a more sustainable and kind of eco product in itself, but that the lockdown, the coronavirus crisis, gave the company the opportunity suddenly to pivot into a whole new range of products, such as pop-up desks for people working from home, screens to divide workspaces where people are going to work, and so on. And that has taken them further on into a set of consumer products, children's products, and so on. So this was quite a remarkable story of a rapid evolution of what was described as a small business with a rather limited product in its earlier stage. And I think it was a fascinating story to hear. I'm going to come to you again, Gordon, on this one to begin with.
Yeah, much to admire. And it certainly ticks the box in that it's environmentally friendly. I really admired their entrepreneurial approach and sort of the positive culture of the business, in that they've reinvented themselves and taken advantage of the difficult economic conditions. And they've really rapidly adapted to a changing marketplace. And I think they've broadened their routes to market by going into the craft business. And they were previously B2B, which is where margins are very competitive. Now they're B2C, where and selling direct to customers, there's much more potential. I thought they were very realistic on openly admitting the need to raise more money. And I thought the whole message was inspirational, really.
Yeah, yeah, I think we all got that feeling. Caroline, I could see you were smiling through the presentation on this one. What was your reaction?
Well, you know, when you hear something, you think, cool, I wish I'd thought that. That was one of them. I mean, it was that wonderful sort of shift and pivot, and very brave. That MD had only been in for 18 months to actually, you know, to be able to react, to take his workforce with him, big, big culture shift here. And not just the workforce, the board. And then thinking about, you know, where they were going to get and how they were going to balance the model going forward. Because, of course, this new B2C direction has opened up a whole load of B2B customers, and it's going to help them sell their more traditional product into a wider customer base. And just, you know, COVID's been so difficult. It's just lovely to hear something that's a real flash of inspiration that's come as a result.
Clive?
There's a lot to like about what they've done. The more cynical mindset I have, unfortunately, means that I start thinking what choices did they have a few months ago, and therefore the innovation, was it driven by necessity, i.e. we're running out of cash, we need to do things versus plan strategy. Flip side, the glass half full side is, you know, what they've produced in a very short period of time and made an impact with is fantastic. You know, if you watch the website, watch what they've done and see some of the financial impact, you know, massive ticks in box, because that's what entrepreneurialism is about. It's about making decisions, getting things to happen. They've done all of the above and much more. I guess from an investor standpoint now, that's probably they've probably given themselves a different problem going forward, which is, what is the business? Is it a craft-focused B2C consumer business? Do they stick to plan A and where the investor's money, or is this, you know, Is it yet to be determined? But a lot to like. CEO gave a very very positive statement about what they've done and what they're trying to do. And I agree with both Gordon and Caroline. You know, lots of big ticks in box.
They probably need some good financial advice from you, Martin Cuthbert. Is that right?
Exactly the same as the other guys. I really liked it. It massive tick in the box for the sustainability side of the equation. The pivot into the desks. I had a look at the desks. I really like the desk. I think I might be tempted to get a desk. I'm getting bored of sitting at our dining room table, even though we're returning to work in the not too distant future. But I thought it was great. I really liked it. I hear what Clive's saying, what drove some of those decisions. But look, hey, they made them and it's worked for them. I thought it was great. And, you know, to see pallets being delivered instead of on those horrible wooden things that people try and leave you with all the time would be good news.
Yeah, and it was a story of optimism, that one. It really was.
Yeah.
And I think we all love the idea that the Prime Minister's office had rung up to order a pop-up desk for Boris. Fantastic.
Cheeky question, Martin, was where was the desk being delivered? But that would be a bit too much, I guess.
Yes, moving on. Jolly good. Okay, so the last of our four, Zenobe Energy, represented by founder Nicholas Beattie. Our first question about this company was, where is it? Because actually its registered office is in St. James's in London, but it's in the battery business. It's in battery storage sites and provision of batteries for bus fleets. And you clearly don't do that from St. James's. And in fact, it has sites all over the country. It has a number of them in the home counties, but it's also in Leicester and Leeds and Merseyside and so on. So they chose to enter in this region, and we accepted it as an entry in this region. It's a business which is not, as far as I understood it, it isn't about the battery itself or the battery technology itself. It's about linking battery storage capacity to bus fleets with clever software and clever financial arrangements in between. It's quite a complex business, I thought, so I'm going to throw the ball to Clive first to comment on it, if I may.
Nicholas brought it to life from what I'd read, and I'd read it as a business model innovation as much as anything, and I was trying to work out where. There's nothing wrong with that, because what they're trying to do and this problem they're solving, the way they've gone about it, the way they've raised the money, the implementation, the management team, lots of big ticks in terms of, you know, investability, progress to date, and obviously the intent of what they're trying to do. Equally, this competition is around where is the innovation, how does it fit, and one of our tasks is to try and work out between these four companies what the most innovative, you know, business is. I'm still left at the end of Nicholas's description with a little bit of a question as to what the key bit of this is, what's replicable by others. And my understanding from what Nicholas said is that, broadly speaking, somebody else could do all of the above. So if somebody came along with deeper pockets, they could do this relatively quickly. And I recognise that's dumbing the business down, and undoubtedly, you know, they've won the contracts, they've done the hard graft, they've got this far. I'd like to know a little bit more about the software and what was in there, because my head says that's potentially where the longer term drive might be in terms of that magic dust, magic sauce people describe. But no, look, a lot to like, and good to hear such progress in an interesting field.
Yeah, I was impressed. I mean, it's the business in the right place at the right time. It's recession resistance. As regards our terms of reference, it's certainly batteries are good for the environment, and it's demonstrated good potential for growth nationally and internationally. I was impressed by, when I read in the report, the management structure, and it's got good non-executives who bring big company experience to the party and can challenge. They seem well organized financially. They seem to recognize that they need more money, and they seem to have access to raising it. And although there's nothing patented, the barrier to entry is not that high, but they certainly seem a lap or two ahead of the competition. To me, this is a very serious business.
Good. Okay, thank you. Martin Cuthbert, anything on that one?
Yeah, I echo Gordon's point. I think anything that has an impact to our cities going forward, as they look like they're going to change around the air quality and people's living standards, couldn't be a bad thing. The way that they can enter into other foreign markets by being led by the users as opposed to by themselves, I thought was quite clever. In a nice way. It really was the big boy, wasn't it, out of the ones that we saw today. It really did feel that way. But a very interesting business. But I do come back to Clive's point. I probably still can't exactly put my finger on what is the key element of it. But very interesting.
Yeah, and I think we can all agree that the whole area of battery-powered vehicles, electricity storage, is a huge growth area and hugely important for the planet, as it were, for the next phase. So it's very interesting to see a business that's making its way in that area. And I think this was perhaps the only entrant this year in the battery arena that we saw, interestingly enough. Anyway, there we are. So that covers the four that we've seen today. It's just given us a glimpse of business life across this whole diagonal stripe of the map of the UK. So I want to thank our guest judges, Caroline Theobald, Clive Borden, Gordon Black, and of course our sponsor, Julius Baer, represented by Martin Cuthbert, the North East regional head, and say we're moving on next to look at the West and South West region and the finalists from there. We'll be doing that in a few days' time. But for now, we say thank you very, very much to our listeners for taking an interest in the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Award, sponsored by Julius Baer. Stay with us to the glorious finale in November. Thank you. Goodbye.